everybody. Welcome to this week's episode of What's Brewing. I am your host, Chris Nosek, as always, joined by my co-host, the one, the only, the epic, Dominic Tiano. We've got some playoff games to go over with you. But first, Dom, how are you this week?
Doing great. No complaints. Happy as a pig in shit. How about you?
Plugging through. Looking forward to some more playoff hockey, especially some of the conversation that I know we're going to have. I want to let some Bruins fans jump in and be able to kind of get familiar with the comment section. So before we dive into everything Bruins, we had a couple predictions that were wrong because we had the wrong matchups out West last week. So we've got to update those real quick because Dallas is actually playing Vegas. And they're already a game in, so we have to put our picks out there in the universe before we get too far on the Bruins stuff.
Vegas.
And how many?
Oh, I don't know. That I don't know, but they're going to win it.
I want to say Dallas in seven so bad, but everything is telling me Vegas in six.
I'm thinking six. They're a well-coached team.
Yeah, we're a little familiar with their coach.
Yeah.
He kind of knows what the hell he's doing over there. So, and then I believe it's Edmonton and LA was the other one that we had predicted incorrectly.
Edmonton. That was the
other one that was expected. Edmonton in what, five?
Yeah, I'll give LA one game.
It's tough to sweep, although it looks like Carolina might actually end up sweeping, but we will see. I have more that I want to go over with Carolina involved. In a little bit here, because as we dive into the Bruins, Jim Montgomery stuck with the goalie rotation. Here are some of the things we got to go over. The goalie rotation. Andrew Peak is now injured and out of the lineup. They called Lauri back up. And obviously games one and games two. Where do you want to start?
I want to start with Jim Montgomery.
Okay. Specifically the goalies or somewhere else?
Well, no, just specifically with Jim Montgomery, because, you know, we just mentioned how Vegas is a well-coached team. So the Leafs last night came in and made their adjustments. The Bruins did nothing. They didn't even do an in-game adjustment to the Leafs adjustment. And at the NHL level, you can't be doing that. You didn't do you weren't perfect in game one, so you had to rectify that. And they did not. The Leafs did, and they failed to adjust. I mean, name me an adjustment that they made at all last night.
They went with a different goalie. Does that count as an adjustment, considering you've done that for two straight months, though?
You've done it for 2 years, basically.
Yeah. Yeah, pretty much. I don't know if I'd really count it as an adjustment. Oh, we got Kevin jumping in. On the comments. And according to Facebook, they lost last night because Ullmark was in net. It's a
can I touch on that? Can I touch on that? Because it's the most, honestly, with all due respect, if you think that the Bruins lost that game because of Linus Ullmark, go watch a different sport because you don't know hockey.
Right. Honestly, I would tell you that Linus's performance last night proved that going to him was the right decision. He kept you in
exactly.
That. Now,
here's a stat for you. By the end of the second period, the Maple Leafs had 14 slot shots to the Bruins' 5. Linus saved their bacon.
They were just outplayed.
Yeah. Their high danger shots, Toronto's with 27, the Bruins 12. The Leafs got to the inside, The Bruins did not. The Leafs defense, other than the Pastrnak goal, the Leaf defense outplayed the Bruins defense. How do you let the world's best goal scorer in behind you? You keep him between you and the puck. It goes over your head, not through you. It goes over your head because you failed to keep Austin Matthews between you and the puck. And he went in alone, and like great goal scorers do, he scored.
Yeah.
Where is any of that on Linus Ullmark?
Well, not only that, but like you said, he played well enough that he kept him in the game. And as Kevin says, it was a gorgeous play by Matthews. Like, it was. That's what a goal scorer does.
Mm-hmm.
But, like you said, if you think they lost because of the goalie rotation, that's an asinine comment. And I get it. Kevin is saying, I wanted to comment on every comment I saw saying it to tell them how absolutely moronic they are. If that's what you want the narrative to be, then you have your narrative because they lost the game. But it honestly, Ullmark's performance proves why it was the right decision to stick with now with the rotation. Now, that's not to say that Swayman wouldn't have made the same exact saves, but the entire game is different if Swayman is in net, which some would argue because he's in Toronto's head that they don't play as well. But these are National Hockey League players. No one goalie like that is in their head. Someone tried to say it was because of Swayman's stats against him this year. But if you look, it was three games. He played very well. He gave up, I think it was 4 goals in 3 games. But if you look at his stats before this year, he gave up 11 goals in 3 games. So they're not he's not exactly in their head rent free.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, to me, the main 2 reasons why they lost. Coaching. Failed to make any adjustments. And the injury to Peak. Now,
that is a key injury.
See, somebody said to me, he's a third pairing defenseman. If you're relying on Peak, then you don't deserve to win. Well, that's not true. You know, we relied on Adam McQuaid. Without Adam McQuaid, we don't win the Stanley Cup in 2011. Right. Peak, a penalty killer, was gone. And the Leafs scored a power play goal to tie it.
That kind of is direct correlation.
You know, now the question is who do you put in without Derek Forbert being ready to come in and kill penalties? Everybody's calling for Mason Lowright, but yeah, without Peak, who's killing penalties?
Yeah, that's the big question. Now, I do like Kevin's question here. He says, now, if they lost 3-2 last night with Swayman in net, then who's the scapegoat? Then everybody would be crushing him for not doing the rotation.
And to me, it would still be coaching and the injury to Peak.
Yep, I agree. That with everything, the way they played, it was lack of adjustments, which falls on the coach. Now, you could make the case that there wasn't a lot they had to adjust from game one to game two. Because
sure, there was. So
well, but
no, there was a lot. There was a lot, Chris.
I'm just saying, if that's going to be your argument, then why didn't you in-game adjust once you started to see the game unfold? Like,
exactly.
There's still a lot. Mike has a good point here. I'm a little concerned if Grizzly can hold up, and if another defenseman goes down, we will be down to Lowright. Asking Forbort to be on his game is a big ask. My understanding is Forbort looked pretty good in Providence during that little conditioning stint. So as a penalty killer replacement, yes, I go Wotherspoon first. And then again, depending on who's next, this is what we were talking about at the trade deadline. Why you don't rush out and trade Matt Grizzly, because right now Grizzly is still in the lineup. If he gets hurt, then you have a concern. But in general, right now, you have potentially Forbort coming back, maybe not till next round, but he's still on the list. And you have Mason Lorai. Lorai would already be in your lineup if you traded Grizzlick. How much more fucked are you if you have Grizzlick out of the lineup, Lorai already in, and no Grizzlick to turn to because you traded him away?
Exactly. Like, I don't think Lorai gets into the lineup.
Let's see. Oh, no, Dom, I'm not talking about reasonable and logical assessments. I'm talking about morons on Facebook who don't know a puck from their fupas. Yeah, there's not many reasonable reactions, we'll say, on Facebook. And I agree with Kevin. Yeah, and you just said it, too. Wotherspoon would be first choice to draw in. I think that allows you to do Shattenkirk on his right side, the correct side, with Wotherspoon. And I would put Grizz back with McAvoy, Lindholm with Carlo. But again, those are pairings that you can jostle up Lindholm and McAvoy and, you know, Grizzlick and Carlo here and there, depending on situation. I'm not as worried about those four kind of flip-flopping. It's that bottom pair that you need to know what to do with.
Yeah, especially when Toronto has last change. Like, you know.
And the last change is why I would leave Mason Lorai out of the lineup, because they're going to do everything they can to make sure that with last change, Matthews is out against Lorai. They are going to do everything they can to get a mismatch like that. I would say for now, Kevin says Grizz is going to get crushed in that top pairing. Not looking forward to that.
They're going to be riding Lindholm and McAvoy a lot. Yeah. Can you just imagine how hard it's going to be on the blue line if Nylander and Marner play?
Yeah,
I know. Marner was in the lineup. He was in the lineup for two games, but Mitch Marner did not play.
No, Nylander didn't play.
Mitch Marner didn't play either. He was in the lineup, but he didn't play.
That's true.
So if Marner finds his game and Nylander comes back, figure something out.
Yeah, and you know what that means is it means you're going to rely on your goaltending that much more. Mm-hmm. And both goaltenders have proven that they're on their game right now. Now, I mentioned that there was some stuff I wanted to go over with you. We were talking about, so you and I talked about it last week, who you go with game one. And you, I think, if I remember correctly, you would said to stick with Ullmark because he is your game one starter.
I thought that's what the rotation was. But I was.
And I was adamant that they would stick with the rotation, go with Swayman regardless of time off because he was next in line. Mm-hmm. Now, we've seen in another series, because everybody's argument is, oh, well, Swayman was the hot hand. So you stick with Swayman. Swayman in the last 10 games that he played was 6-4-0. Linus was 6-3-1. They gave up like one difference in goals. So in the last 10, I think, I don't remember the goal count off the top of my head, but I know they were one apart from each other. They were both a hot hand coming into the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
It was Swayman's turn in the rotation. He played absolutely very, very well. Now, this year, he was 25-10-8. Linus was 22-10-7. Almost identical goaltenders. So when they say they have the same confidence level with either one in net, they fucking mean it.
Yep.
Now,
let me say this about the rotation. Everybody says it's never been done before. Well, yeah, it has. The Boston Bruins were the first to do it in 1972, split right down the middle between Jerry Cheevers and Eddie Johnson, and they won the cup. The Bruins did not do it when they had Andy Moog and Reggie Lemelin and lost. They did not do it when they had Tuukka Rask and Tim Thomas the first time and they lost. They won the second time. You know, they didn't do it last year when they had Ullmark and Swayman and they lost.
And Halak either.
Right. You know, so it's been done. The Hawks did it. I'm trying to think of who else did it. But it's not a new thing, the rotation and even split down the middle. Everybody thinks it is.
Now, Kevin says, people flip-flop like crazy. 1 month it's Swayman is the best. Next month it's Ullmark is the best. Just sit back and enjoy the ride. I am happy to see this tandem rotation. Now, like I said, the question now becomes, it's like the chicken or the egg. Do they play so well because you're rotating them? Yes. Did they play so well in their games because you've been rotating them all year? Yes. So why do you all of a sudden want to stray away from something that has kept you two elite goaltenders for 2 years, essentially? Like you said, it goes back almost 2 years that this rotation has helped them both. Now, I get it. You eventually have to see what Swayman is on his own because you have cap issues coming up. But you and I have talked about it. You can pay both of these guys for another year. You have cap space. You got to use it on something. If your identity is these goaltenders, keep them around. It's working. You almost won the division with your top two centers being Charlie Coyle and Pavel Zacha.
I was reading Kevin's message there. I had something I wanted to say.
Was it this one here about the Jimmy Thomas?
Yeah. And now I forgot what I was going to say.
Did David save his ass?
Oh, yeah. But Jeremy, this is something important when it comes to Jeremy Swayman. We heard his comment earlier in the year about arbitration. Hockey Night in Canada interviewed him after game one. And he was asked by Kyle Bukauskas what went through his head when he was told he was starting game one.
Yes.
And his reply was, it's about time. He paused for 2 or 3 seconds and then went on.
Yeah. He's waiting for his moment, and he got it. Mm-hmm. Now, Ullmark played just as well. I want to make that clear. Like, this isn't the shit all over Linus Ullmark. You go back to Swayman in game three, which is what the rotation would incur anyway. Now, here's my question. What if Swayman loses game three? You stick with the rotation. You go back to Ullmark.
Right. I think where you have to make a decision. And maybe start somebody back to back is when you're in an elimination game. If you're down 3-2 and you think one guy gives you a better chance of winning game six, then you got to go with that guy.
Yeah, and that's where the vibe check comes in. Until you are about to be eliminated, you go Swayman game three. Even if he wins, you go back to Ullmark game four. Why? It doesn't change anything. Everybody says going into last offseason, he overthought it. He even admitted, Jim Montgomery even admitted that he overthought the usage of the goaltenders. Now, let's also remember, game one last year, Linus Ullmark played out of his mind. Fantastic game. Game two, the time you went to him in a back-to-back for the first time in months, he gave up 6 goals.
Yeah.
Even during the regular season, one of the attendees would get a couple games in a row, so that wouldn't be breaking the rotation. They've done this rotation for over 2 months now, consecutive. Regardless of time off, regardless of anything, they have gone 1-1-1-1-1-1. It has not deviated from that since, I think, if I remember correctly, it was like December.
Since Linus came back from his injury.
Yep, it was the injury. And even then, he only missed, 2 games?
Oh, I thought he missed 4.
Maybe a couple more. But yeah, I mean, Swayman proved that he can do it. I'm not worried about that. And I think Swayman is the one that you would ultimately falter to if you're in an elimination game. If you fall these two in Toronto and you come back to Boston 2-1, at that point, you got to pick someone. It would be Swayman's turn anyway. So you're going to him for game 5, 6, and possibly 7.
Yeah, I think that's the time to consider changing it, is an elimination game.
That's the time to start thinking.
Yes.
One of the other comparisons that I wanted to bring up too is people wanted to sit there and go with the hot hand. Well, there's another team out there that went with the hot hand, and now they're down 0-2. And that's the New York Islanders.
Mm-hmm.
And you would think when it comes to goaltending, Patrick Waugh would know what the hell he's doing. He went with Semyon Varlamov for games 1 and 2. Varlamov in his last 10 games was 8-1-1. He was very clearly the hot hand. Sorokin was 3-6-1 in his last 10. And now they're down 0-2. Now they have to turn it over to Sorokin.
Like, you know what? They really shouldn't have lost that game.
No. I'm not saying it was Varlamov's fault either. But your argument, not yours specifically, but the argument of you ride the hot hand is also disproven in that series. It's not about the hot hand. It's about what has made you successful. And in this case, the rotation has made you successful. So you stick to it until you have a moment where you have to think about whether or not it's worth breaking from it. Kevin also says, we also can't forget that Linus and the Bruins last season were up 3-1 in that series. People love to act like Linus can't do this when it's a team sport and the whole team collapsed. Absolutely. And Linus was hurt. He was trying to play injured. That's where the overthinking came from. He's injured. You should have just gone over to Swayman. You didn't. It was a mistake. You could make the same call to say, start one of them until one of them gets hurt. But your rotation is what has made you successful this season. Why deviate from the successful formula you have to try to make another one at this most crucial time?
And had they rotated last year, who's to say Linus would have even got hurt?
Right. Right, because that would have been, I think he got injured in late in game 3, was it? Or was it game 4?
Game 4.
It was game 4. So,
which would have been Swayman's start.
Would have been Swayman's start. So maybe Linus doesn't get hurt. Maybe Swayman gets hurt. There's a
or
lot
maybe,
of what
if. Maybe neither one. Because neither maybe one. Maybe playing more than you're used to playing contributed to the injury.
There's a lot of what ifs there. We are second guessing what he did last year, which was deviate from the rotation in the playoffs. So you want to have him do it again this year just because it worked so well for you last year? Like that's asinine. Kevin says, if you're a goaltender in Boston and you don't win the Stanley Cup every year, you're a choke artist and a bum who will never be Lord Tim Thomas, the best goalie in the world. Sarcasm. I mean,
I think the other thing we got to touch on is I think we know what they're going to do in net. They're going to stick to the rotation until it's no longer the best option. Defense is all up in the air, but they got to do something up front. And I think before this series even started, I suggested putting Frederick, Beecher, and Geeky on as your third line. Lauko out there, like, I mean, you love Lauko's energy and stuff, but he's not a third line player.
No.
He's got to be on that fourth line, man.
I like what I've seen from Maroon. Maroon hasn't been a problem. He's been actually quite good. it'll be interesting now that we've seen that Brazo is skating again. Sounds like he's still a little ways away, though. But hopefully he can become an option sooner rather than later. That'd be nice. I would put him in over Lauko on that third line if and when he becomes an option. Mike's comment here, though, he says Marchand seems a little off on his timing, seems slower in the playoffs, and arriving late to plays. Thoughts on Marchand's play?
Last night, I thought there were times he was trying to do too much on his own. Game one, he was fine. What did he have in game one?
I'll try and pull up his stat line real quick from it. But game one, he certainly wasn't the problem. It was great to see DeBrusk get off the board, on the board. Mm-hmm. It was great to see Freddie get the empty netter. Like, you had contributions from guys that weren't in your top six, which is always a good thing to see. Kevin has a good question here. Are we going to see JVR? Do you make an adjustment with JVR going into game three?
You know what? If I was going to do it, I would do it in Toronto.
Would you do it game three or wait till game four?
I would wait till game four.
Yeah, I think Kevin, you're right. Marchand didn't have a goal and two assists.
I'm pretty sure he did.
He had three assists.
Three assists. Marchand was fine in game one. Last night he was just trying to do too much. I think he realized that the team was having trouble. If you watch a lot of Marchand's puck handling when he had possession, he was trying to get to the middle of the ice. And I think he realized he's a smart enough guy to see that his team wasn't capable of doing it.
Not unreasonable thought.
So, he tried to do it.
Yeah.
But back to JBR. Back to JBR. I wouldn't do it in Boston. I would do it in Toronto. One, because he played there for so long and he knows the arena. That plays a lot of benefits. But there's no pressure from the crowd.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's when I would do it. Game four in Toronto.
I would do it game four. I know we've talked about the blue line. Real quick, I do want to put Mike's comment up here. He does say, stick with the rotation with the goalies. If it doesn't work out, off-season discussion, be third playoffs for these guys, one and done if it happens. Yep. And then Kevin says, if you want to win a cup, you know who you got to go and get. Dom knows who I'm going to say. Oh, boy.
Nick Ritchie.
Probably. That would be my guess. That's what he's going to say. That would be.
I'd rather insert Callum Ritchie now if we could than Nick Ritchie.
So the conversation. Yep, we nailed it. Nick Ritchie. The conversation on the blue line, though, I know we are in agreement on not going to Mason Lorai just yet. Is there any thought that maybe he can give you an offensive spark from the blue line, allows you to take out Shattenkirk off the power play, gives you a little bit of energy on a newer looking blue line, if you will, almost like staple him to Carlo. And then you have your Lindholm McAvoy pairing, Carlo Lorai. I mean, now you're looking at Wotherspoon and Shattenkirk anyway, unless Forbort's ready to go. Because every time we've seen,
you're asking too much to put him on the power play in the playoffs when you got Mitch Marner, who's a heck of a penalty killer, and you're the lone defenseman out there.
I don't disagree that we shouldn't go to him right away. I'm just trying to see why you might look to him. And if it allows you to do Forbort and Wotherspoon, and that's like, you have a pretty strong penalty killing trio between those two and Carlo, with the option to go to Lindholm and McAvoy. So you don't have to worry about your penalty kill. He can help the power play. And it kind of, it like, every time he's re-entered the lineup, he's played well. And he's given them a little bit of an offensive spark.
Okay.
Maybe I'm just trying to talk myself into being okay with it. If Montgomery does do it, but
to me, I'm going to overthink it. I'm not going to overthink it. For me, it's plain and simple. In a playoff game, I do not want Matt Grizzlick and Mason Lowry as two of my left shot defensemen.
That's why I pulled Grizzlick out of the
line. Absolutely, positively not. Well, if you're taking Grizzlick out, who are you putting in?
It would be Wotherspoon. And again, if Forbort's ready, then it makes a little bit more.
But Forbort's not ready. Montgomery already said that.
For the next game, yes, but after that.
Right. Okay, but he didn't travel. Somebody tweeted out he didn't travel. So
okay, I must have missed that one. So
to me, there's no way Matt Grizzlick and Mason Lowry can be two of your three left shot defensemen. Absolutely no way. Because that leaves Lindholm as your lone penalty killer on the left side, and that means you're moving one of McAvoy and one of McAvoy or Carlo to the left side to kill penalties, and then you're short one on the right side.
I'm not saying they should do it, and I agree with Kevin.
There's no way.
Found his offensive stride yet. I just don't see any reason this would be a good idea for the team or for Lowry. I get why they would keep calling him up, because you want to have the depth with you in case you need to turn to him because Forbort's not ready. I think that's exactly why they're calling Lowry up, because Forbort's not ready. And because Peak is now out, you carry the extra defenseman in the playoffs. You just have him with you.
You do. I'll tell you, if he wasn't injured, the guy I would call up would have called up to get a look in the regular season for a couple of games to see if he could be an out option in the playoffs is Alec Regula.
Yeah, he's another shutdown guy. Doesn't he play the right side too?
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, he can play both sides.
Let's see. Kevin says, in a perfect world, Mason would be playing the full playoff run for Providence. That is the experience I want for him. I agree. I absolutely agree. And I think some of it is like Dom mentioned, who's injured down in Providence, who you didn't get a chance to see. I mean, if Alec Regula had gotten a chance to come up and show that even as an eighth or ninth guy, you know, fourth on the depth chart on the right side behind Peak as a shutdown guy, like, that would have been extremely valuable.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, you know, your depth on the blue line is in no particular order, by the way. McAvoy, Carlo, Lindholm, Grizzlick. And then from there, you've got Shattenkirk, Wotherspoon, Peak, Forbort, if healthy, and then Lowry.
Yeah, that's your depth. It's being tested. It's being tested. Yes, Kevin.
Peak is listed as week to week. Now, it's also lying season, so who knows how severe it really is. But you got to get through this week first, and then who knows? After 1 week, he can go to day-to-day and then play again. I think he took a shot off the hand. I think that's what they kind of determined the injury was.
I think that's what Nesson was showing last night as his last shift, but I didn't have the Nesson feed, so I don't know.
That, if I remember correctly, that's what they were showing as last shift. And, you know, going down to five defensemen really hurt this team last night, and they were already struggling enough. Now, they caught
now, didn't players. Carlo played a fantastic game?
Oh, Carlo.
Brandon Carlo was their best defenseman last night.
The only time I ever worry about Brandon Carlo is if I see him get hit up high. That's it. He's one of the best. I would put him in the top three when it comes to shut down defensemen in the league. Now, offensively, that's a different story. I was thrilled to see him get the goal in game one. That was so good for him. But he's not your offensive threat on the blue line. He's not meant to be. But what he is meant to be, which is a shutdown guy on the right side on a second pair, he is damn good at it.
Mm-hmm.
And way underappreciated.
Because people just look at points.
Yep. Kevin says, if it's not death, I don't want to hear it. Bergeron played with a punctured lung. Chara played with his jaw wired shut. That dude better have lost his leg.
Yeah, but Kevin, you can play with a punctured lung. You can play with your jaw wired shut. You can't play if you lose a leg.
Well, that, and you can't play if you can't hold your stick.
Right.
If he has a bone issue in his hand that doesn't allow him to hold his stick, I mean, he's your third pairing defenseman. You should not be relying on him. I know, Kevin, we know that you're just joking around, but there are some people who are going to take that line of thought and run with it as gospel. They're also the ones that sit there and blame Linus Ullmark for the loss yesterday. So you know who we're talking about.
Not me.
No, not us. Not reasonable people. But like I said, they did get a couple breaks. What did you think of the no goal where Swayman caught it in the glove on the line?
Ullmark.
What did I say? Swayman? Ullmark.
Yeah.
Ullmark caught it right on the line. They end up coming back from, at least on Nesson, they came back from commercial and they were reviewing it.
According to somebody with knowledge, there was a replay that they had in Toronto. And by Toronto, I mean the War Room, not Hockey Night in Canada, that clearly showed it did not cross the line.
Right. No, they were reviewing it, though, when they got back.
Yeah.
I think it warranted review.
Unless you see it in slow motion, you just don't know how close it was. So until I saw the replay, I'm going, okay, now I can see why they're reviewing it.
Yeah. I think they ultimately got it right.
Hockey Night in Canada never came back. Well, wasn't on a commercial break at that point. So, like I said, apparently the War Room had a replay that showed that clearly it did not cross the line.
I think they got that one right.
Mm-hmm. They got the high stick right.
Yep, they got the high stick right, calling that one back. That one you could see almost right away off the first replay even.
Yeah. Here's my question for you on that. How was he left so wide open? Like, I mean, he had time for that puck to come down below the crossbar and knock it in. He was wide open.
He was. I agree with you. But here's my question. Does Ullmark get over to make the save if he waits?
I don't know. But that's not the point I'm trying to make.
No, he shouldn't have been that wide open. That's its own big defensive failure.
Right.
I think part of why he reacted and got it on the high end the way he did is because he knew that if he didn't get it, it was going to... It was going to get a stop from Ullmark. Kevin says, Bertuzzi scored that goal from the balcony.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just don't know how you leave a guy wide open. He had enough time for that puck to come down. That's how wide open he was. I just don't know how you do it.
Yeah. I'd have to go back and look at the tape and see how he got wide open. But he was... There were two of them in the area, too.
Yes.
I think Matthews was right next to him.
I can't recall if it was Matthews or Domi, but
I thought it was Matthews right next to him because I thought they originally called the goal for Matthews. So let's see. Kevin says, I think I saw Bertuzzi stick touch Bork's number banner on that goal.
No. It was Espo's.
Yeah, would have been Espo's, right? Yeah. I mean, they got lucky, but they also got lucky in game one because Austin Matthews hits a fucking post on a breakaway by himself.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Swayman comes out, and of all people, Matthews hits a post. Let's be real. Yeah. That should have gone in.
Yeah, like, I mean, I had somebody tweet at me about, because all I did is made a simple tweet last night that said Swayman or Allmark, and somebody going at me about how Allmark has been way out of position all night long and blah, 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 blah. I said, oh, like you mean the one where Matthews hit the goalpost?
Yeah. He probably thought that you were backing him up. Probably doesn't know which goaltender's in net every other night. The team has done things well. They've also been outplayed astronomically. Mm-hmm. This series is exactly where they deserve it to be. 1-1. That's the best I can tell you. It deserves to be 1-1 with the way the Bruins have played. And the goaltending is not one of the reasons. The goaltending is the reason why it's 1-1. And it's also the reason why it should be 1-1. You could make the case that Swayman should have lost that game and Allmark should have won his with the way they played.
Or you could make the argument that they should have lost both games.
Then you'd really be screwed. Who are you putting in net in that third game?
Like, I don't know, but we're not there. So it's, I don't know. Hopefully we put to rest the argument that goaltending is a problem.
I never thought it was a problem. I thought it was hilarious.
No, I know that. I'm saying I hope we put it to rest.
I hope so too, but it's always going to be a thing. Right now, your biggest issue is what you're doing on defense. That is the number one question for this team right now. Excuse me. Yeah, Kevin. Game three, Bussy, sarcasm. I mean, if you're down 0-2, you might as well, right, Kevin? With the way some people think about your goalies?
Yep.
But do you look to change anything? We were talking about up front before. Where did we land on JVR? Do you try and put him in the lineup?
Game four,
okay.
In Toronto. Game three,
you don't change anything up front.
I would put Beecher on the third line between Frederick and Geeky, and I would move Lauko down with Boqvist and Maroon.
Okay. I don't hate that adjustment. I don't.
It's an adjustment they got to make because game one, Boston's bottom six outplayed Toronto's bottom six.
Yes.
Game two, it wasn't even a contest. It wasn't. Toronto's bottom six killed Boston's bottom six.
Yeah, and it doesn't help that a guy like Lauko can't for the life of him find the back of the net.
No. And I mean, it got so bad at one point, Montgomery didn't want fourth lines out against each other. He put the third line out against Toronto's fourth line.
Yeah. I know everybody loves Jacob Lauko, but he is a weak link at this point. And I hate to say it this way, but once Brazo comes back in your lineup, Lauko's out.
Mm-hmm.
I would not be surprised if you saw Brazo on the third line when he returns.
With Geeky in the middle and Freddie on the left.
Yeah. That's probably what I would see him doing. Because then you keep Boqvist and Beecher, who have worked well together on the left and center swap, because you got to remember Beecher's the one taking the draws on that fourth line, mm-hmm. and Maroon has fit with them. Beecher, Boquist, Maroon has been the better of your two bottom lines.
Yeah.
Let's see. Kevin, the way Boston fans obsess over a fourth line role player is insane. Yeah, remember when it was AJ Greer? Remember when it was Oscar Steen? Like, I get it. They're likable guys. All of them are. But when you go, what did he go one goal for 36 games at one point?
What's he played 60 games this year and he has two goals?
I think he's got like 2 points. He can't even get on the score sheet accidentally on a second assist. Like, I feel bad for the guy because he can't find the point sheet for his life. And he's trying so hard, but he's riding that struggle bus so much. He had 10 points in 60 games and was a -3. 2 goals.
Yeah.
But don't worry, it was a career year because, you know, he put up 10 points of his 17. He has 17 points in 83 career games. Regular season. I will give him credit for this, though. The guy can draw a penalty.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if he's on your fourth line, if your fourth line can be Lauko, Beecher, and Brazo next year, I'm in. I like it. That's fine. I think you have other options, but I'm fine with that as a line for your fourth line next year. If you can make that line work in the playoffs this year, I'm fine with it. But other guys bring you more. He cannot be the black hole on your third line. Not when you have a black hole on your top line, because Danton Heinen's not a goal scorer. He's not a point producer. Yes, he provides balance for the line, and that's fine. You'd like to have Danton Heinen on that third line and an actual top six winger on that top left line wing. You don't have the option for that. You don't have that top line left winger. So again, I'm fine with Heinen, but the problem is if you have two grade A, we'll say a B plus player in Zacha, an A plus player in Pasternak, but you have a C-level player next to them. Dan Heinen is good, but he's not a top three forward on any roster in this league. He's the go in there and not screw things up because your top three forward is injured guy.
Yeah.
It sucks, but if that's who's on your third on your first line full-time, you can't have a black hole on your third line in Lauko.
No, ideally, if development went faster, Jake DeBrusk would be the left winger on that line, and Fabian Lysell would be the right winger on the Coyle line.
That's a conversation for next year's team.
No, I'm saying if development went the way... Yes. Those were my key words. If development went the way it was supposed to.
I know, but if you talk about Jake DeBrusk like that, someone's going to bring up the 2015 draft, and we don't need any of that shit around here.
No, nobody's going to bring up the 2015 draft because you won't and I won't, and you don't have to put anybody who does up on the screen.
No 2015 draft comments coming up, but I will bring up Kevin's here. If you want to get excited over a fourth-line guy, Boquist is that guy.
Okay, Ken... Can if anybody wants me to comment on Boquist, can we at least spell his name right?
Yeah, Kevin, come on.
Come on, Kevin, you're better than that. No, Kevin's absolutely right.
Kevin says, what about the 2015 draft? Absolutely nothing, Kevin. Absolutely not a damn thing.
Boquist sometimes gives me flashes. Gives me flashes of the old Merlot line with Boquist on there.
Who does he remind you of from that line?
Daniel Pie.
That's what I was thinking. I also think Boqvist is the kind of guy that can be on your third line if you needed him to be. Like, Boqvist reminds me, style-wise, a lot like Danny Pie, but his usefulness is a lot like Danton Heinen.
Yeah.
I mean, I wouldn't mind seeing, well, again, if you're trying to make an in-game adjustment or something like that, I wouldn't mind seeing you try this if you're Jim Montgomery, where you move Boqvist to the left side on the third line, you bump Lauko down, and you move Beecher to the center. So then you have Lauko, Beecher, and Maroon on your fourth line, Boqvist, Geeky, and Frederick on the third line.
Now, I wouldn't mind trying Boqvist up with Zacha and Pastrnak.
I wouldn't hate that either. I do think Boqvist between Geeky and Frederick might also work a little bit too. He's a solid possessive kind of distributing center on the low level. But yeah, putting him next to kind of swapping him up in the Heinen spot. Again, it's not a permanent change. It's not in pen, but it doesn't hurt to just shake things up a little bit. Yeah, Kevin, because typing is easier than, or speaking is much faster than typing. But yes, care about how his name is spelled. And no, you probably wouldn't have spelled it right no matter what you did, Kevin, unless you copied and pasted from Google.
He doesn't know how to use Google.
No, he's got you. Why would he need Google?
Yeah. Where's Dom's number? Let me call him. It's faster than using Google. No, it's not, Kevin.
Only when you answer. So, how do you feel about the series now that it's going back to Toronto tied at one? I had said Boston in six. I believe you agreed with me on that.
No.
No. Did you say
I
seven?
I said I wasn't making a prediction.
I thought I had a recording of it from last week where you picked something.
No.
I'll have to go back and listen.
Go back and listen. I did not make a prediction. Because I came right out and said, I'm not making a prediction. Today was my cousin's birthday. She lives in Toronto. And I texted her and I said, happy birthday, cuz. I would really like to say, I hope the Leafs win a playoff series for your birthday, but I can't since it's my Bruins. So instead I will say, I hope you have a great day. To which she replied, thank you. Let the best team in brackets Leafs win. My feelings haven't changed. It's what I said about the whole Atlantic division coming into the season, that it was going to come down to coaching. And I still think this series is going to come down to coaching. And despite winning game one, Jim Montgomery's been outcoached.
So far. Kevin says he has Toronto winning the series. Kevin, how many games? That's my question to you. How many games? It's I don't think Toronto rattles off three straight, and I don't think Boston rattles off three straight. Like, the other thing about the loss yesterday, you have to remember, is that this is, what, the fifth time we've played them this season? They were bound to win one of them. Like, mm-hmm. You're not playing the Ducks, who you did lose to earlier in the year, by the way. You're not playing the Coyotes. You're not playing
a garbage. Who we also lost to.
Right. You're not playing the Sharks. We'll pick on the Sharks because I don't think they beat many, if anybody. Kevin says he has Toronto winning it in seven. So that would mean they drop another one on home ice. in the seventh game. I could see it going to seven. I don't think you'll see many more of the performances that you saw yesterday from Ilya Samsonov.
We know hockey games move fast, but with DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NHL, you can score faster than anything happening on the ice. This week, new customers can bet $5 and get $200 instantly in bonus bets. You got shots on goal, saves, puck lines, money lines. You can bet it all. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app with code THPN. New customers bet just $5 on the NHL and get $200 instantly in bonus bets only on DraftKings Sportsbook with code THPN. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction, void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/hockey for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources. NHL and the NHL Shield are registered trademarks of the National Hockey League. Copyright NHL 2024, all rights reserved.
I think you might see two of those in a seven-game series.
He was good last night.
He was fucking on fire.
He was really good.
I don't think it lasts. Just like
it's so hit and miss with him.
Oh yeah.
And that was his first win against the Bruins in the playoffs. I don't know how many starts he's had.
I'm sure we could find it somewhere. But I think he had
three with the Caps. And two with the Leafs.
That would sound right.
I think that was his fifth start.
It was bound to happen that he gets a W against the Bruins in the playoffs at some point. And the Leafs were bound to win a game against Boston at some point this season. And they were 0-for. So it makes sense that they take one or two in this series. That's just how it works. Kevin says, only reason I have it going seven games is because this is yet another year Toronto doesn't have goaltending. That's my point. And the Ilya Samsonov goaltending issue is up and down, but right now Colorado's is way down.
Mm-hmm.
They put in, what, six on Connor Hellebuck, and they still lost.
Yeah.
Now you see what I mean by Gorgiev was cooked?
They called up, what's his name? From the AHL today.
Well, yeah, he had been out with an illness. Leninen? I gotta pull it up.
Yeah, they called him. I think it was today they called him up.
Anunin.
Yeah, I don't know how you pronounce it.
Something like that. I wonder if they turn to him in game two for tonight. Because
that'd be ballsy, wouldn't it?
Did you see Gorgiev last game though?
Yeah.
Like, I get it. This Anunin kid only has like 12 or 13 games under his belt, but I mean, can you really throw Gorgiev back out there? I don't know if he can.
I don't know.
I mean,
you're going to have to at some point.
I was going to say, maybe you throw him out there just to say, hey, we still have confidence in you as our starter. Yeah. And then if he still looks shaky, win or lose, then like if you lose, then you can sit there and go, okay, well, we got to turn to the kid now. If you win and he doesn't look very good, you can still turn to the kid. But if he wins, looks good, and he's refound his game, now you have a series.
Right.
Let's face it, Connor Hellebuck is going to bounce back from a six-goal game.
You got to have him on a short leash tonight.
Oh, yeah.
You have to.
Yeah. That's going to be an interesting one to see how that plays out tonight. Let's see. But now do you see why I was saying the Jets in five?
Yeah.
Because
I don't know. You just can't count out McKinnon and Makar. You just can't.
No, I just look at their goaltending and I go, they're porked. Kevin says the reason why Toronto has only won playoff series in 20 years is because they've been trying to build from the top line down for years. It's insane. Read a book.
Toronto hasn't beaten Boston in my lifetime in a playoff series. And I'm over 60.
Yeah, it's nice living in their heads. I mean, right now you're the only series at 1-1, but the only other series that's played two games has been the Carolina Islanders game series. And I know we were talking about that one earlier, but Carolina does look fucking good.
Yeah, but that series should be 1-1 right now.
Yeah, but it's not. I wonder if sweep is creeping into the heads of the Islanders. But no. I think they go Sorokin game three and they make it a 2-1 series coming up.
Patrick Waugh, coaching.
Always an X factor.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see who else we got tonight. So actually right now it is tied. The Capitals and Rangers are tied at 1. Rangers are winning that series. Connor McMichael has a goal for the Caps and Vincent Trocheck for the Rangers.
Connor McMichael. Okay. So I have to say this because when you brought up Connor McMichael, it reminded me of it. So you've heard me say this many times about how Dale Hunter prepares players for the NHL.
Yes.
Do you know how many former London Knights that Dale Hunter coached in the Ontario Hockey League are in the NHL playoffs?
Is it more than a full roster?
Almost. 18.
Wow.
That's more than any other team in any other league around the world.
It's more than probably a few of them combined, too.
Yeah. So as soon as you said Connor McMichael, I had to throw that out there. Another Dale Hunter coach kid.
And he may be from a different school, but Dakota Joshua for Vancouver.
Mm-hmm.
He looked good in that game, but you could argue that Nashville was in that game more than they should have been, too.
Yeah.
And now Demko's injured, by the way. Did you see that?
No.
They ruled today that Demko is out for game two.
Wow.
And there's no timetable for his return. So.
Wow.
Yeah, that series is making an interesting turn right there.
Did you know Thatcher Demko and what's his first name? Alex Nedeljkovic. So Alex played in the OHL. I forget where Demko played. Was it the USHL when he got drafted? Or I can't remember.
Oh, I'll pull it up. Don't worry.
They trained for years at the same goaltending school. I forget the coach's name that owned the school. And I talked to him that whole summer. Leading up to the draft, and Demko was ranked higher than Nedeljkovic, and his coach kept telling me, Dom, Nedeljkovic is going to be the better NHL goalie. Funny how things change, eh?
Oh yeah. Let's see. He was with the Utica Comets and then BC. I forgot that he played at BC. U.S. World Juniors under 18, under 17, U.S. National Development Juniors, it looks like, USHL.
I'm sure he was drafted out of the USHL.
The Omaha Lancers back in 11-12. And then the LA Junior Kings. Let's see. Yeah, from the San Diego area. And let's see. Nedeljkovic. Whoop. That's a name to spell.
Plymouth Whalers. Ontario Hockey League.
Let's see. OHL. Plymouth Whalers, Florida Everglades, ECHL, Metro Jets, the NA3HL. That's a tongue twister league for you. But he put up good numbers with the Whalers.
Mm-hmm.
Really good numbers, actually.
He was a fabulous junior goalie. Fabulous. Second yes, he actually, I think he played with Sagan. Or did he?
In the OHL with the 14 fit? No. He wouldn't have because Sagan was on the 10-11 team that won the cup.
Yeah. Nedeljkovic came after.
Nedeljkovic played with the Plymouth Whalers starting in 12-13. So he wouldn't have been playing with Sagan.
Yeah, he came the year after.
Yep. Let's see. I was trying to see who else was on that team, but let's see. Tyler Kevin Sagan, stopping grounds. And then he corrects it, and he says, I can spell that one. Kevin can spell Sagan's name. Good for you, Kevin. I think he Googled it.
He did. No, actually, he called me. You didn't see me on my phone.
Well, actually, you know what it was autocorrect just didn't get to it in time.
So,
you know, it's already in his phone because, you know, it was 11 years ago.
Yeah. Poor Kevin.
I think that's about the length of time since Kevin's been on the mic, too. Kevin. Actually, oh, that's what it is. He knows how to spell it because he looked at his fucking jersey. Why'd you misspell it the first time? You know what? We'll have to tempt him to come on the show. We'll have to bring snacks on.
Yeah, well, you bring food and Kevin's there.
That's what
you
I'm
can
saying.
Bring a live, you can bring a live fish and he'll come on and skin it and cook it. Or he'll eat it raw.
Yeah, right. Kevin, which one? Raw? He'll make sushi out of it.
Yeah, he'll make sushi.
Oh, man. So, we've got Vegas over Dallas. Are you still confident in Winnipeg over Colorado?
Yeah.
Winnipeg over Colorado. How you feeling about Vancouver over Nashville, especially with the Demko injury?
Well, that changes everything now. If he misses one game, Vancouver will still take it. If he misses more, then Nashville can take it.
Kevin says, I don't think I'm ever coming back, boys. Well, at least you're in the comments, so we still like you a little bit. And Edmonton will wipe the floor with LA. It's really tough to get a sweep at the NHL level. So I'm really tempted to give LA a game, but I don't know. Edmonton, especially in round one, they just always look like they're on a mission.
Yeah.
And you've got McDavid healthy. You've got Draisaitl healthy. Bouchard is healthy.
Five assists in the first game, eh?
Yeah. I mean, Evander Kane is the big injury that they have right now, and he's playing through it. So, like... And oh, by the way, they have Corey Perry. They got Adam Henrique at the deadline. Like, this is a much deeper team than normal. So, obviously, Edmonton. I at this point, I think Edmonton makes it to the conference final, probably against Vegas.
Let me ask you this. Did Evan Bouchard, and I mean, this guy stuck out to me as, because of his birth date, a 15-year-old in the Ontario Hockey League. I think he had a November birth date, if I remember correctly. So he was able to play as a 15 turning 16-year-old. But has he not had the quietest 80 points by a defenseman that you ever heard of?
I would probably agree with that sentiment. 82 points in 81 games. I think a lot of attention is given to what's his name, the guy they got from Nashville last year, and his name is escaping me.
The guy I wanted.
Matthias Ekholm.
Right, Ekholm, yeah.
I think Ekholm gets a lot of attention because he is a better all-around defenseman. It's almost like Ekholm is their Hampus Lindholm and Bouchard is their Charlie McAvoy. They're both really, really good. Just one of them has way better offensive numbers because of how he's used.
Mm-hmm.
Not a great comparison. It's like a 70% comparison, but the general concept is there. And then they also have Darnell Nurse and Cody Ceci, who takes a lot of the defensive kind of spotlight as far as attention. But yeah, Bouchard was their third point scorer on the team. He's the only other one above 80 other than Draisaitl and McDavid. But let's see. Yeah, they've got... Mark down the lineup, Desharnais, Henrique. Oh, and Sam Carrick was a solid sneaky pickup for the bottom six for them as well. And Troy Stetcher is depth defenseman. I forgot that they snagged Carrick in that Henrique deal. That was a good pickup for them. That's with Corey Perry, that's solid depth right there.
Yeah.
And depth that wants a cup. So they have a lot.
Yeah,
they
want like, to I mean, it's hard to pick against Edmonton. Like I just saw today the most points through the first 50 games, 50 playoff games in NHL history. Wayne Gretzky, 104.
Jesus.
Mario Lemieux, 101. Connor McDavid, whatever he's at now, 80-something, 89, is third. And Leon Draisaitl is fourth, 1 point back.
Wow. That's incredible.
So three of the four are Edmonton Oilers in different generations.
Yep. Wow. And Edmonton wants to complain about not having a cup. Come on. I mean, I'll put it this way. Edmonton makes it to the conference final. It's just, are they playing Dallas or are they playing Vegas? Because it's going to be one of those two teams.
I think it's Vegas.
I know. I want to say Vegas too, but think about this. All right. I want to know if you know what all these names have in common. You ready? Wyatt Johnson, Roope Hintz, Jason Robertson, Joe Pavelski, Matt Duchene, Tyler Seguin, Mason Marchmont, Jamie Benn. Do you know what those eight players all have in common?
Besides they all play for the Dallas Stars?
Aside from the obvious. There's one statistic they all have in common.
They have all never won a Stanley Cup.
No, Sagan has one.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's right.
And Duchene does. No, he doesn't have one.
I don't know. What do they have in common?
They all scored more than 20 goals this year. Eight players.
Okay.
or more goals on the season.
Well, the Bruins hold the record with 11. I think it is. And they never won the cup.
Right. But my point is when you have that kind of depth scoring, all right, like Ben scored 21 goals, 60 points. Let me see how many had, and he was sixth on the team in points. You had 9 players with over 50 points on the season. When you have that kind of scoring depth, and oh, by the way, that doesn't include the 14 points that Logan Stankoven put up in 24 games.
Okay, get to your point. When you have that kind of depth, so what? It's hard to
pick against that kind of offensive depth when they have the solid defense and they also have the goaltending. All three zones, they can compete with Vegas.
But the Bruins had that and more and lost.
Which time?
They hold the record for the most 20 goal scorers in a season. You said Dallas had 8?
Dallas has 8. I know you said
Boston. I think Boston had 11, was it not? Or was it 13?
I'm going to say Dallas has 9 because Logan Stankoven played in 24 games.
No.
I'm sorry.
That's like calling Phil Kessel a 40-goal scorer when he never reached it.
No, just the pace that he was on, though, was amazing.
Now, I got to tell you.
I really want to go Dallas.
Last night, Hockey Night in Canada called Austin Matthews a 70-goal scorer.
Yeah, and he's
because
not.
He got his 70th goal of the season, regular season and playoffs. That doesn't make you a 70-goal scorer. A 70-goal scorer is the regular season.
It's 70 and 82. I know. And like I said, I really, really want to pick Dallas. But I look at Vegas and I just go, God damn it. They just got Stone back. And of course, he scores their first goal. Of course. Like, oh, man. I so badly want to see Dallas do it. I just can't fathom them beating Vegas. Vegas is just that good, and they're deep, too. Their goals and their scoring comes from their high-end talent, but my God, are they deep. I mean, Keegan Kolesar was one of the top three in hits this season.
You know what? If Boston can't win the cup, I want Vegas to win it.
A back-to-back?
Yep. I just, you know what? I don't care that Bruce Cassidy is the coach there. Or
if anything, it makes me want to see a back-to-back more. Because he does deserve it.
No. That's not why I want to see it.
No?
You have an owner there who was willing to spend $1 billion for a franchise. And you brought in some great hockey people, George McPhee, Brad McCrimmon. And it's an owner that doesn't care how you do it. Just go out and win. Here's the money. Here's the blank checkbook. And they go for it every year. They don't care about whether they just signed you to a new 8-year, $11 million contract last summer. If you no longer fit what they're doing, you're gone. They got no qualms about it. None whatsoever.
And yet people still want to go there, sign there, and play there long term. So, right. I get it. I love seeing that model win. Colorado has kind of had the same approach a little bit, not to the same degree of success. But to your point, the ownership, Kelly McCrimmon has come in. I mean, did you see his press conference when he said that when he was going over the Mark Stone injury?
Yeah.
Like, he is taking it to heart where people are sitting there saying that they're circumventing the cap. And he's trying to sit there and say, no, I'm not. I'm playing by the rules. everyone else needs to step up their game and play along the rules with me.
Just like the Bruins did.
Right. And I mean, we've gone over it. Half the league is doing it, just not to the same degree. Half the league could have gone out and given up 3 first round picks to get Thomas Hurdle, but mm-hmm. they didn't.
Right.
Like, I think the only team, there's probably maybe 4 teams that San Jose looks at and says, we don't do that deal with. And it's because they're all in the division.
Exactly. It's, you know, I saw someone ramble on today about it, and it's such a bullshit way, and it doesn't cost the team any money because insurance is paying for Stone's contract. Even mentioned like Jeremy Jacobs didn't have to pay for Forbert's contract because it was covered by insurance. That's not true. That is not true. Insurance covers 5 players per team. So it's depend. You think Matthew Patra's contract was insured?
It would be cheaper to not insure it and pay him his right. money.
It would be cheaper not to insure Derek Forbert too. Yeah, Jeremy Jacobs is paying that out of pocket. So, yeah, it's just people ramble on about things they think they know about, but they have no clue on how it absolutely works.
Okay, so 14 teams, I was just counting them up. 14 teams used more than $1 million in LTIR this year. All right.
And of those 14 teams, I bet you all 14, with the exception of the Bruins, so maybe 13, will have a bonus carryover next year because long-term injury reserve does not cover performance bonuses.
Actually, there was I think that information is already out as to who has money going over next year. I think it was a Frank Saravalli tweet.
Well, it can't be done yet because there are performance bonuses that have to do with the playoffs.
Well, I think it was a, like, based on what we know right now kind of a thing.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so from Frank Saravalli 8 hours ago, he said, sources, 6 NHL teams will carry at least $1 million in bonus overage penalties into next season's salary cap, an all-time high. Part of that was planned pre-spending. A portion of the projected $4.3 million increase, some wasn't. It looks like they got some information from Cap Friendly on those numbers as well. But again, like you said, it's still fully being calculated, but so far 6 teams are already in that situation. Now, I will point out, too, of those 14 teams, 6 of them used $3 million or more. Now, the funny thing is...
Hi, Karen.
What's that?
I had to say hi to Karen.
Oh, Karen's jumped in. Welcome back to Karen. She's been a longtime listener of the show, and I know she and her husband have had some health issues over the past few months, so hopefully they are both doing very well. Karen has been listening since day one of the show, so shout out to Karen for jumping in. Kevin says, I love your cute logo on your mic, Dom.
Thank you, Kevin.
Kevin, it's also on his website, too. If you've ever actually visited it, you would know.
Kevin's never visited.
No, Kevin's not a visitor. He says that he's always working, like he is right now. So, you know, he's not much of a visitor. But you want to take a stab at which team spent the most money this year with LTIR? Kevin's shouting out Karen as well.
Without having it in front of me, I'm going to say Tampa Bay.
They were number 2. They spent 10.2 mil in cap space, in LTIR.
Then it would be Toronto?
Toronto, 14.1.
So I was right.
You want to know? Second you want to see who rounds out the top five?
Yeah, go ahead.
Vegas is at number three, 8.7 mil. Mm-hmm. Colorado is at four with 7.4 mil, and then the lonely Montreal Canadiens at 5.3.
Wow. Imagine spending $5 million in LTIR money and not making the playoffs.
That would be bad. You want to know who wins the record for having the least amount of cap space left at the regular season ending? That's not zero.
The least amount. Hold on. It's under $100,000.
Oh yeah,
right.
There is.
I think it's like $6,000.
There's a team with 1,941 listed on Cap Friendly.
Washington.
Washington, where are they on the list? Nope, they are way down there. They had 460,000 left.
It's not the Islanders.
No. No, they are way further down.
Oh, I know, I know. The New York Rangers.
No.
Okay, I give up.
They both had under 150,000. Listed with $1,941 in cap space are the LA Kings.
Okay, I'll have to check it to my numbers because mine are more accurate.
I'm sure they are. They also have the Ottawa Senators at 16,437 and the Penguins at 20,501.
And the Bruins with 1,912,305 in LTIR spent.
They have $1,999 or $1,999,384 according to Cap Friendly.
Oh, see, they're wrong. It's 1,912,305.
Cap Friendly, you need to bring on a new consultant.
Check Puckpedia. See how close I am to Puckpedia.
I will pull them up as well. According to Cap Friendly, though, the team with the most cap space come the end of the season.
Columbus. 10
million five, Chicago. According to them, Columbus only had 4.1 mil.
Yeah, but Columbus traded Andrew Peak to the Bruins without retaining, so it's got to be Columbus. That's sarcasm in my voice.
Let's see. Salary cap on here. That's signings, trades. There we go. Projected cap space. Maple Leafs, 14.15 mil.
Just go down to Boston.
Boston. There we go. 1.91 mil over a projected cap space. So that would be the LTIR space. 1.91 mil. They just stop it at the second decimal.
Oh, no, click on the team and get to the whole number.
Oh, they show just more? Like it,
yeah.
Oh, there we go. Let's see. 1,912,307.
I got 305, so we're $2 out.
Okay. I'll take the Wikipedia number.
How does Cap Friendly come up with their number?
Fuck if I know. See, I need the formula. I need to memorize the formula first.
You should go by my number. Always.
I will go by your number always. You know that. Which is why, okay, I want to know your pick.
The formula is the upper cat limit minus square I-29.
Oh, yes. On that Excel sheet, which, right?
Yeah. I-29. And, oh, that's 30. It's their cap hit for the season. And that's what they've used. So the Bruins' actual cap number for the season was $85,412,305.
Yeah,
they well over the cap.
They have $307, but you're still off by $2. So I will take your number over it.
Okay.
Because I'm sure they round in more spots than they should. And you know what? It took them 82 fucking games for me to lose my bet over the division. I consider that a almost a win because of how many people were sitting here
saying, that's a
wild card team at best. They aren't doing this. They aren't doing that.
If I were you, I would take the win. That's a win.
It's not, though, because
that's
I didn't
a win.
Money.
It doesn't matter. I'm giving you the win.
I didn't stray from it, though. I didn't cash out when I could have. I stuck with it till the
end. And you told me you weren't going to cash out.
I lost, though. But I can say this.
Did you bet your mortgage?
No.
You're okay, then.
I'm okay. I can lose the money that I lost. It's still... It's one of those things where when I hear other shows, other experts sitting here going, no one thought Boston would be in this predicament. Fuck you. Yes, I did.
See you, Kevin.
Kevin. See ya. Have a great night. We'll talk soon. Yes, I did. And I still have the clip. I will play it next week. I said it with conviction, too. And... I will take the L.
I remember it.
I will take the L on it because I was not correct, but it took them all 82 fucking games to prove me wrong.
Mm-hmm.
So that's as close to a win as you can get. And let's be real, there's at least one game in there in those 82 that they lost that they never fucking should have lost.
Arizona?
I was going to say Ottawa at the very end there, but sure, we'll go with Arizona. We could probably go with the Anaheim Ducks won in the first, like, it was their first loss of the season. They gave up the 3-goal lead.
Yeah.
You win that I win my bet. Jesus, fuck.
There's several games like that. Any one of the overtime losses.
No shit. Don't even get me going on that. My point, though, is yes, I had them in this predicament. I still don't want to waver off my six game selection because, you know, I know we said there was a lot that Montgomery could have adjusted going from game one to game two. I don't disagree with that. I also understand the mindset of I'm changing my goaltender. I'm not changing anything else. And let's see where this goes. There's plenty of time to still make adjustments. You've got to now adjust for an injured Andrew Peak. You've got to adjust for a black hole on your lineup somewhere. Wherever Lauko's playing, he's a black hole. I'm sorry. He's an energy boost, but of no consequence. And you have to – I mean, you're going back to Swayman. There's no doubt about it. Karen says that game last night was fucked. They kind of fucked themselves, honestly.
Yep.
Lots of mistakes that were preventable. A lot of the same things that we were saying about Toronto after game one. Fixable. And that's why I'm not overly worried. I think going back to Swayman, it's not an elimination game after that. I'd be going back to Omark in game four.
Yeah.
I mean, think about it. Win or lose, what's the problem with going back to Allmark. Now, if Swayman goes out and shuts him out, okay. I won't be upset if Swayman starts game four. I'm not going to cry about it, but I also look at it and go, the rotation is why Swayman's playing well, and you've got Swayman in five game and game seven if it comes to it. So you don't have to. Even if Omar goes 0-3 against this team, Swayman still gets all the ones that matter.
And you've basically told the team, forget the fans. You've told the players. You basically told them we're rotating.
Yep.
So how do you all of a sudden stop rotating?
You panic. That's what it is.
Yeah, but you're sending the team two different messages within 2 days.
Right. No, that's what I'm saying is the reason why you switch it from the rotation is a panic move, and that's mm-hmm. the message that you're sending the team.
Yep.
If you stick with it, regardless of the result, you are keeping true to what got you here, what almost won you the division again on the last day. And it wasn't the goaltending's fault that you didn't win the division. Certainly not.
Heck, they almost won the President's Trophy.
Yes. I'm with Karen. They need to remember we want the cup, so to play for it. And to put that game behind us, move on and play and fix the mistakes that were made. I mean, you can beat this team. You have the advantage in goal. You have the advantage on defense. Even without Andrew Peak, I still think you have the defensive advantage. And you have the psychological advantage.
Do you have the advantage on defense? Toronto's defense outplayed Boston's defense last night.
I think overall you have the defense. Let's not forget that you played a little over a period with only five defensemen.
I would argue that... I don't know. I still think... Even at the beginning of the game, Toronto's defense outplayed Boston's defense 1-6 as a unit, with the exception of the Pastrnak goal.
Yeah, that was a nice little brain fart for them.
Goaltending, as good as Samsonov, however you want to pronounce it, was last night, it still advantaged Boston.
Yeah, like I said, you only get two of those games out of Samsonov in a seven-game series.
Yeah, because I think Allmark outplayed him last night, despite the loss.
Yeah. As we wrap up here, Karen says, we can only fix the mistakes that are made by going out on that ice and fixing what needs to be done. One thing that is turnovers. Yeah.
Coaching needs to adjust, Karen.
Yep.
And they did not adjust yesterday.
Coaching needs to adjust. Keep true to the goaltending tandem. I know people aren't going to like it, but it didn't work last year when you strayed from it. It didn't work the year before when you strayed from it. Show the team that you have conviction in it. They will stand behind it. You have two almost identical goaltenders when it comes to the raw numbers and the raw data anyway. So keep with what's working there. And, you know, you got to find a way to score. Got to make some adjustments. You know, we talked about holding on to the puck, the Marchand's game. Beyond that, I'm looking forward to, we got game 3 and 4 before we're back on the air. We'll probably do another show after game 5, I think. Of the Saturday game, the Monday game, yeah, we'll probably be back on Tuesday, I think.
Yeah, that'll be game 5, right?
5. We'll have game 6. We're at least going to 5.
I think we're going to 6. It could be over, or it somebody's going to be up 3-2 next time we're on.
And with that, Go Bees.
Go Bees.